taking away your name.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, and I'm speaking with Christine Fair, who's a professor in the Center for Peace and Security Studies within Georgetown University's Edmund A. Walsh School of Foreign Service. Previously, she served as a political officer to the United Nations Assistance Mission to Afghanistan in Kabul and as a senior research associate at the United States Institute for Peace's Center for Conflict Analysis and Prevention. She's also a senior fellow with the Counterterrorism Center at West Point. Welcome to Background Briefing, Christine Fair.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Chris, what do you think is going on with the arrest of Raymond Davis? At this point, we've learned that he's probably a CIA contractor, but there are rumors or suspicions that this may be some kind of spy versus spy situation. We're told that the people that he shot, the two people that he shot, were supposed to be attempting to rob him. But there are some indications that they may have been working for the Pakistan Intelligence Service, the ISI. Is there any information that you have to that effect?
Well, I mean, let's address the first part. I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, the U.S. government has pretty much said that he was a contractor that was working for the CIA. We have subsequently learned that he was doing surveillance and security detail for a safe house in an obscure part of Lahore. And presumably, there are a number of reports that suggest that this cell was specifically dedicated to keeping an eye out upon Lashkar-e-Taiba. Lashkar-e-Taiba is perhaps one of the most lethal terrorist groups in South Asia. Some of your listeners might know of it because that group perpetrated the 2008 massacre that lasted 4 days, of course, in part due to incompetence of Indian security officials that took place over Thanksgiving weekend. So the reason why this would be provocative, of course, is that the Lashkar-e-Taiba, along with a number of groups associated with the Afghan Taliban as well as the Haqqani network are assets of Pakistan's intelligence agency, the ISI. So there's no doubt that they would have known about the cell, but there's also no doubt that it really would have discomfited them to know that the CIA was going after one of their most prized proxies.
And do you think that it therefore follows that the orchestration of outrage that has associated this trial and this arrest and the fact that one of the victims of the CIA operative or contractor shot his widow committed suicide by swallowing rat poison. And apparently there's been substantial demonstrations as a result.
Well, the frustrating thing about that, so the first issue is it is strongly my suspicion. In fact, a very high-level Pakistani official had intimated to me before I went to Pakistan about 3 weeks ago that, in fact, the two fellows that were following him were his, quote, ISI detail. Now, what does that mean, ISI detail? I seriously doubt that the fellows that followed him were, in fact, official ISI, but rather, you know, the ISI, like the CIA, hires contractors of a variety of levels of competence and skill. And I don't doubt for a second, in fact, the reporting has suggested that these guys may have, in fact, have been hired by the ISI either to, A, just sort of ruffle this guy's feather and send a message to the CIA, or even in extrema, anticipated that this guy, being a special operations fellow, a known shooter, may have responded in the way in which he did to a potential menacing threat, thereby bringing about this rupture. With respect to the widow, I think that there's more than meets the eye. I'm forgetting the woman's name, and I'm actually quite Jugnu. She is the wife of the editor and founder of the Daily, Jugnu Mohsen. She is the wife of Najm Sethi. I was on a radio interview with her about 10 days or so ago, and she had actually some very specific information about that suicide. Apparently, it came down to her relationship with her in-laws and what her life would be like with those in-laws, as well as the disposition of that family towards taking money to compensate them for the loss. So the suicide seems to be much more germane to the status of that woman within her in-laws. And, of course, for anyone that's familiar with South Asia, this is a persistent issue. It's not remotely uncommon for daughter-in-laws upon being widowed to actually commit suicide. It's just that in this particular context, this particular suicide has taken on a particularly intense political salience.
Again, I'm speaking with Georgetown Professor Christine Fair. But of course, this idea that Blackwater and CIA contractors are infiltrating Pakistan came up during the Kerry Lugar bill when it was being offered to Pakistan $7 billion largely for education and welfare. That prompted a lot of the press in Pakistan, and one assumes that that perhaps the ISI was stoking the nationalistic fires of going on about how the Americans were doing all kinds of nefarious things there. So that's the context, isn't it?
No, actually, you have part of that story correct. The issue with Kerry Lugar Berman that was so objectionable to the military was the very specific conditionalities upon security assistance, which mentioned in very explicit terms the requirement for the Secretary of State to certify that Pakistan, among other things, is making progress in degrading the Afghan Taliban, groups like Lashkar-e-Taiba and Jaish-e-Mohammed, and very clearly Pakistan is making no progress along those lines, having progress towards money laundering legislation and progress towards making transparent, without mentioning AQ Khan by name, the network that nonetheless he was in charge of. Now, the Pakistan embassy, Ambassador Hussain Haqqani, was very much involved in another important conditionality was that the military not intervene in political affairs. Now, this came out of a long-standing criticism that the United States had disproportionately assisted Pakistan's military regime. And this was largely for historical reasons. From 55 to 65, Pakistan was a Sino-Centro ally. From 79 to 89, Pakistan was central in the anti-Soviet jihad. And obviously from 2001 to now, and particularly for the first 8 years under President Musharraf, Pakistan was an ally of the U.S. and the war on terror. And so these were all periods under which Pakistan was governed by a military dictator. So there was this long-standing criticism that the United States stopped providing assistance when there was return to democracy. So Kerry Lugar Berman was intended to do two things. Basically, it was intended to be a reward for Pakistan's return to democracy. This was actually conceived of in 2008 by Vice President Biden initially, and then it became Kerry Lugar Berman. Then the other issue was that it was to put an incentive in place to keep the military out of the business of the running of the state and to put pressure on the military and intelligence officials to stop engaging in activities which are harmful to the U.S. global war on terror. Those were the issues that the ISI had generated and, quite frankly, manufactured protests about. And it was able to do so because it has a number of media interlocutors, both on television, it's the most vibrant media that the ISI can buy, as well as in print media. But rest assured, everyone knew about this. They chose the timing to manufacture this dissent just as the Kerry Lugar Berman legislation was being rolled out. It had nothing to do with these contractors that was cruising about. It had everything to do with the U.S. conditioning assistance of a military variety upon the very things that the Pakistani state remains dedicated to doing.
No, I meant that was a precursor to set the stage, if you will, in terms of atmospherics. Now that there's a second round of this spurious nationalism being ginned up, and whether or not these guys intended to shoot or kidnap or whatever they were planning on doing to the American, who's now, we're claiming diplomatic immunity, and I guess the judge will rule on that, next week sometime.
But of course, the issue is it's not a judicial issue. This is a drama. I mean, I call this a legal loophole-a-palooza. This is not a judicial issue. Eventually, the prosecutor is going to have to ask the foreign officer, did this fellow have diplomatic immunity? And he's going to have to, because it is a he, it's not a she, is going to have to simply reveal his cards that, of course, he has diplomatic immunity. The sending country determines the status of their individuals in the country, not the receiving country. The receiving country only accepts or denies. And this fellow had been in the country for 3 years. He was on a legal visa. It had been renewed on a number of occasions. So the difference is that the Foreign Office, when it finally reveals its hand, it will either be truthful, in which case this whole drama will have been revealed to be nonsensical, or it's going to continue to obfuscate and demur, which will provide further evidence that Pakistan's not a law-bound society.
But what is the motive here? We're in this perpetual dance with Pakistan, where we give the military money, and now with the Kerry Lugar Burman, we give the civilian side money. They don't do what we ask and expect of them. They're aiding and abetting the people who are killing our boys and girls in Afghanistan. We're supposedly there because we're afraid the nukes will fall into the wrong hands. But this dance that goes on, at some point you wonder whether we can cut bait in frustration and accept the consequences, or why do we continually allow ourselves to be jerked around like this?
Well, okay, so going back to the up, to the strategic level, what is going on here? This is most definitely a CIA-ISI wrestling match. The problem with Pakistan is that it cannot say in most forthright terms that we're not going to stop supporting the Afghan Taliban, we're not going to stop supporting the Haqqani Network, we're not going to stop supporting Lashkar-e-Taiba and those elements of Jaish Mohammed that have not turned against the state. Pakistan cannot say and will not say publicly that we view the Indian threat to be as an existential threat as you view Al-Qaeda. And these organizations are the organizations that we rely upon to deal with India, because we have no diplomatic, military, or other means, political or otherwise, to deal with the Indian threat. They can't say this. And in fact, I've had a number of extremely high-level Pakistani intelligence officials say to me, that we're in a position that we don't like to be in. We need your assistance, but we resent it. And unlike other partners that you have, they can set the terms. They have leverage. He noted the Indian situation where the Americans basically gave the Indians, and he was right, a bomb-friendly civilian nuclear deal, because we wanted the deal more than the Indians did. So the problem with the Pakistanis and the Americans is that we need each other, but we need each other for reasons that don't make either of us happy. And the fundamental problem with this mutual dependence is that we have strategic interests that are completely different from one another. And so unlike the India-U.S. relationship, which is proceeding because we have increasingly consonant security interests for the region as well as internationally, our relationship with Pakistan requires constant attention, constant grooming, because our own natural strategic interests are divergent, not convergent.
So in other words, it's not going to get any better, but it could get a lot worse.
There's no question that that's the trajectory that we're presently on. Both countries are currently figuring out, is this partner of ours a partner, albeit sort of a pain in the arse partner, or is this in fact an enemy? We're both asking this. And so my reading of the Raymond Davis affair is that this is really the CIA dealing with the ISI. We have no options. I mean, after Mumbai, the United States understands that Lashkar-e-Taiba is not simply a threat to India, but it's a threat to us. We can't do anything within Pakistan. We can't alter their cost-benefit calculus to knock it off. And so, the CIA, the fact that we have this, potentially a CIA cell hunting Lashkar, is a pretty good signal of our desperation to do something. And the Pakistanis are equally adamant to keep Lashkar alive. So at the end of the day, Lashkar-e-Taiba, along with the Afghan Taliban, especially as they're trying to get out of Afghanistan, and groups like the Haqqani Network, there's no way of painting over these very real differences. There's simply no way. So the question is, how do we retain this partnership when our strategic differences are so striking? And as you said, we paid the Pakistanis, you know, like circa $18 billion, whatever the magic number is, overtly, and dog only knows how much covertly, to support the war on terrorism. Yet they're supporting the group, the Afghan Taliban, which is the only group that's killing our troops in Afghanistan. Al-Qaeda's not killing our troops. There are virtually no Al-Qaeda left in Afghanistan. They've all fled to Pakistan. So the American taxpayer, the American government is really wondering, you know, what's going on with this partner of ours? They've taken so much money, yet they have resulted in so many fatalities for us in Afghanistan and elsewhere. But I also want to add very briefly that for the Pakistani citizen, they see a similar toll. As a result of their country signing up with us, they have an unprecedented insurgency that has expanded throughout what's now Khyber Pakhtunkhwa and the federally administered tribal areas and has gone deep into provinces like the Punjab. And they don't see this as blowback from their country supporting these various militants. They see this as a direct consequence of this country, of their leadership aligning with us. So these differences are enormous, and they're very difficult. It's just difficult for me to imagine how we overcome them, especially in the wake of the Raymond Davis affair, which has laid all of this naked for all of us to see.
Well, I thank you so much for talking with us here today, Christine Fair.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, Chris. Bye-bye. Hello again, I'm Ian Masters. I'm just speaking then with Christine Fair, who is a professor in the Center for Peace and Security Studies within Georgetown University's Edmund A. Walsh School of Foreign Service. Previously, she served as a political officer to the United Nations Assistance Mission to Afghanistan in Kabul and as a senior research associate at the United States Institute for Peace's Center for Conflict Analysis and Prevention. And she's a senior fellow with the Counterterrorism Center at West Point. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about the state of women on this International Women's Day.
Sing it with me if you like it.
We who believe in freedom, the older I get, the better I know that the secret of my going on is when the reins are in the hands of the young who dare to run against the storm.